The following audio is from Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Visit fbchurch.org/sermons for more.
So it was interesting as Janice was talking, when she talked about having Corey at her side when she was being counseled and with Scripture. Corey was in my four-year-old Sunday school class, and he was the first little kid that I could see God really had a grip on his heart as a four-year-old. And I think, you know, most of my life has been in little kid up through place to be here. And I just think as when we do that, you know, we've got the Corey Millikins and the John Smiths and the Dan Jarms. We just don't know. They haven't been named yet, you know, as who they're going to be. So what they'll grow into. So that's always one of my incentives, just to keep going as part of our growing up. So I'm 71 years old. I'm a retired nurse anesthetist, as Trudy said. I spent my entire career at Sacred Heart, educated in the old system where you could be a nurse by 20 and an anesthetist by 23 and then go get your degrees later, which I did. I did spend about a year and a half, a little more, teaching anesthesia to Palestinian nurses in the Gaza Strip, occupied Israel, when I was younger. I was became a believer at the age of 23. I was not raised in a Christian home. And mentorship of my coworkers brought me to the Lord. I started attending Valley Fourth Memorial Church when Tom Starr was there. Some of you will remember some of these names. And then Fourth Memorial Church. And I've been at FPC since the beginning. I actually stayed back 1 week as we transitioned because I had a two-year-old class that didn't have coverage. So, yeah. I was raised on a dairy farm, and my twin brother and I were the eldest of seven. I always knew I wanted to be a mom, and even if I didn't get married, I still wanted to be a mom. I had a couple of serious relationships in my 20s that the Lord really protected me in by not having them work out well. And I had kind of made a plan that if I was still single, by the time I was 35, I would look at adoption. So one day I woke up and said, "You're 33, you better get at it. This takes a while, you know." So, yeah. James 1:27 says, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." I chose to adopt internationally, partly because I wanted to adopt an orphan or an abandoned child. But truthfully, I mostly and naively didn't want to deal with the birth mother issues. So, but here's the news flash. You always get to deal with birth mother issues in any adoption, but that's a topic for another day. So, I also didn't want to deal with what I perceived as the stigma of being pregnant and single in the early 1980s when I started the journey. So adoption was sort of a natural way for me to go. I worked with an agency in Seattle that did international adoption called WACAP. And India was the only country that they worked with at the time that was placing infants with single people, healthy infants with single people. So that's the program that I enrolled in. After about 2 years of processing and then waiting, and you literally just got on a list and you moved up a list for the boy list or the girl list, and I had said, "I'll take a girl." Katie arrived in a basket with another baby at the International Terminal in SeaTac. She was about 12 weeks old and weighed in at 5 pounds, 4 ounces. Her birth date was assigned. We knew it was wrong just by the trail in the orphanage, but so she's probably at least a week older than her official birth date. So, I had moved from the Valley to the South Hill, and I was attending South Hill Bible Church at the time that I adopted Katie. The pastor there, some of you will remember the Lees, Rebecca Arianis is their daughter. Yes, let's remember. And they were very embracing of my single parent adoption. I have been asked quite a few times through the years, "Well, what does the church think about you're single? What do they think about that?" And I have never, if anything was ever said, it was way out of my earshot, because I always felt very embraced and supported in the single adoptive parent journey. So My parents, I took 3 months off completely and then worked a little less than half time for another 3 months when I adopted Katie. And my parents took care of her at that time when I was working part time. And then a lovely family from South Hill Bible did 2 days a week and my parents 3 days a week, which was a lovely way to, you know, for a single parent to do that. I was very fortunate to have become the program administrator in my nurse anesthesia world a little earlier than I anticipated, because I think it was the only job in the anesthesia planet that doesn't have you taking call and working odd shifts. So I was able to maintain a really regular hours and a kind of a normal schedule at home for being a single parent. WACAP had a local adoption support group that met monthly for potlucks and programs. And from that group, I bonded with four other single mothers who had adopted infants from India in the same two-year time frame that I had adopted. We did a lot of things together socially. We took care of each other's kiddos, and we became very good friends. But one really important thing that I learned pretty early in my single parenting life was that as much as I liked that single mom group, what single-parent families really need is two-parent families to come alongside them. So, life on life. Our dear friends Sandy and Jim Hallam, who don't attend here, but we met through adoption, had four children, three of whom were adopted, and they really filled that role in the early years for me. Plus, they had brown kids with white parents, and that was sort of a good thing for my brown kid with a white parent to see. So, this is my brown kid right here. So, yeah. When Katie was two, I returned to Fourth Memorial because of Marilyn Clock and the great children's ministry that I had seen when I had attended there several years before. We met other families who'd embraced us and included us in their lives. And some of you'll remember Karen and Wade Altmeyer. Karen is probably one of the most gracious women on the planet. They lived just south of me. They had a little mini farm with critters, and it was a great place to go. We had a lot of back and forthing with them, and actually did a lot of vacationing together for a season of life when her kiddos are just a bit older than mine were. So in 1989, Doug and Lisa Demmert moved to Spokane because Doug enrolled in our nurse anesthesia program. And I discovered that they were attending Fourth Memorial, which I had nothing to do with. They had had a referral from Bellingham where they'd moved to try out Fourth Memorial. So over the next few years, we had became very fast friends, really chosen family, as they still are, and did a lot of back and forth between our houses, just sharing life, which we continue to do to this day. I was in Roger and Carol Widmer's growth group, along with Dan and Melinda Ferguson, and they were great at just embracing our single family. They had the most fun activities, those Widmers, and they would do a Father's Day event where they had games and all sorts of things to sign up for, and they just invited us to come and do that with them. Father's Day is a weird holiday when you're a single mom with no dad on the scene. My own dad died when Katie was seven, and so up until that point of time, we had always had Grandpa to do things with, but it was wonderful to be included the year he died in the Widmer Father's Day event. So, plus, they had this great clan, you know, that was always around. So, yeah. I always wanted at least two children, but acquiring my second child took a bit longer than I anticipated. My dad had renal failure and was very frail, and then he did die when Katie was seven. India was where I assumed I would acquire my second child. But they had closed adoptions for single people for healthy babies and would only place their most seriously handicapped children with single parents. I had explored foster adopt, used other local agencies that had leads that didn't pan out. A local adoption agency had a program where moms who were working with the state who might want to say in what happened to the placement of their child were referred into this agency, Open Adoption Services, and they had a program for 3 to 6 year olds when these moms could see the writing on the wall. Their rights will be terminated, but maybe they want to choose or sign up for a semi-open adoption. So I had learned about that through some training I had done and enrolled in that program with them. I'd updated my home study and done the required education that was necessary to be adopting a child where rights were going to be terminated. That said, I never saw a referral of that child, but that 3 to 6 year old. They did their primary work with newborns, but relinquishing birth mothers in open adoptions don't choose single parents, so I was never expecting that I would have a newborn. So, Psalm 82:3 says that we defend the weak and the fatherless, uphold the cause of the poor and the oppressed. On weekends during the summer that Katie turned 8, we hosted a single pregnant Gonzaga student from Africa who had agreed to allow us to adopt her baby through this program. She had come to the U.S. and Gonzaga very early pregnant, and because of language and other barriers, the pregnancy wasn't really discovered by her support group until she was about 5 months along. Due to complicated circumstances, she was going to lose her sponsorship and her ability to stay in the U.S. if she kept the baby. We became well acquainted with her because she spent every weekend, Friday to Sunday night, at our house. Over the summer, we set up a nursery and we waited for her late August arrival date, due date. The day before she delivered, I realized that her understanding of the adoption was that I was going to adopt both her and her baby. And language and culture and other things had probably gotten in the way of us realizing that neither one of us understood how that was to be. So, and that she would be keeping the baby. She had no intention of being separated from her baby. She was 19. She was herself an orphan. And I learned that later that in her culture, a rare out-of-wedlock pregnancy, that baby is absorbed into a large extended family. It is never relinquished. So I prayed rather furiously and seriously because she was in the hospital already and ended up having a section the next day. Lord, Lord, what should I do? Because we had an imminent decision, it felt like. I really did feel the Lord just close that door, for circumstances that to this day I don't really understand and made me very, very sad. But it really did seem like it was the right thing to do. So here's this single mother with nothing. So we gave her everything out of our completely set up nursery. She was here on a student visa, so she wasn't eligible for public assistance except for WIC and $144 a month because the baby was U.S. born. So we grieved what felt like a newborn death. We did stay in touch with her and with her daughter for several years, and they thrived with lots of help from God's people. For her, keeping the baby was absolutely the right decision for her. She actually lived at St. Margaret's Hall, which is a Catholic family charity's mother and children. Actually, I think it's more than that now. And the house mom there was a believer who took her under her wing and taught her life. And then she ended up living with a recently retired couple in their home, working 2 full-time jobs as a certified nursing assistant. And the couple took care of the baby named Helen. And she went on to get a graduate degree and have a very successful life. So, I was 43 when this situation happened and decided I was only going to work on adopting a second child until 44. I'm not sure what was too magic about that, but it just seemed like the right number. So, after that, I would decide that one child was fine and I'd just move on. In January, after the failed adoption, which had occurred in about the 1st of September, the agency called asking if I'd be interested in adopting an unborn child with very serious congenital problems. And I reluctantly declined, feeling that already having another child and having to work nearly full-time would be incompatible with caring for a child with very special needs. The adoption counselor in the same conversation said that there was another situation they were working on that she might be back in touch with me about. But I honestly forgot about that part of the conversation until she called me later. So a week later, I got a call asking if I would consider a soon-to-be-born Latin baby whose birth parents were first cousins. I later learned that she'd been referred by Child Protective Services after she'd gone to Planned Parenthood at 32 weeks for an abortion. So, she'd had no prenatal care. She'd concealed her pregnancy from her family whom she lived with. Just the agency, which had a lot of couples hoping to adopt newborns, had no one in their pool at that window of time who was willing to take a Latin baby with first cousin parents. So, I had lived, in the Middle East where who do you marry? Your first cousin, you know, so, which is really common. And I think that's, we sort of have a U.S. stigma about that when it very rarely yields to any particular problems. So 17 days later, Anna was born at about 35 weeks, and she weighed in at a whopping 4 pounds, 12 ounces. So because of the circumstances of her adoption, it would remain closed and is in fact closed to this day, which means that you have to petition for information. There's quite a network of information out there now, and it isn't that you can't find it, but what that really means is you do not approach without the birth family, without going through an intermediary and getting permission to do it. So we met Anna when she was 24 hours old. We gave her flowers and she gave us a baby. And she had a cover story going to the hospital. Her water broke at home. She was in cahoots with the school counselor. So she had pretended to be helping a friend take care of her siblings while her parents were out of town. So not only did her family not know she was pregnant, they never knew she had a baby. So because of the closed adoption, our family could not come to the hospital. Just Katie and I could go. But who could go was our dear friend June Kennedy, because she was the nurse exec for Deaconess, and they let her in. So she came to the nursery while we bathed and dressed Anna and got all of her instructions and did those fun things. And for me, that was the only baby I took home from the hospital, because the other one I took home from the airport. So, yeah. But June, that time is still very precious to me, just that sweet time with June coming down to do what probably my mother would have done had she been allowed in. So when Anna was born, I was 2 weeks into a semester with my heaviest teaching load. And because of the short notice on her, that 17 days that I knew about her, I was only able to take a month completely off work, which was breaking my heart. But then I went back and worked just 16 to 18 hours a week just to teach my classes for the remaining of the semester. My mom, who was quite newly widowed, then came every morning, got Katie off to school, and took care of Anna. And she often talked about what a sweet time that was, you know, to be able to take care of this little baby after she'd lost her husband, who had been, although his head was good, his body failed for so many years, you know. So a sweet time and healing time for her and for us, and then just a relief for me to have Nana taking care of, especially my little baby, who might have weighed 8 pounds by then, but still a very small baby. So because the kids were so far apart in age, I had decided a nanny was probably a good option for me, because they're 8.5 years apart. And one of my first nannies was Jill Krause. Some of you will, I hear the odds. I remember that Bill came to town to get his master's before he later came back here to become the children's pastor at FBC. So Jill nannied for me for about a year with Anna when she was about a year old. So another very sweet gift from our church community. So we've been blessed these past 30 years by members of this church who came alongside in friendship and in encouragement. And my daughters got to see two-parent family life in action. I was in the same growth group for a number of years with Christine and Dean Pyle, and they loved us well and then continued to do that. Patty and Ken Huey were all part of that same group. Subbed in 1 year when I somehow managed to have to work during a week at the lake cabin, and part of an extended time. So Patty and Ken went and stayed at the lake so that I could work and the kids could stay there and not have to relinquish our time. So just very sweet times. Dan and Kelly Dean and Doug and Lisa Demmert and I were all part of the Place to Be teaching team when Anna was in elementary school and class. And then one Sunday on the way home from church, Anna said, and I can almost not say this without crying because it's so sweet, when I grow up, I want to find a man who loves me as much as Mr. Dean loves Mrs. Dean. So, and Doug loves Lisa. This isn't so fun. This is funny. Doug loves Lisa just as much, but he doesn't use the same words, but that's okay. So I think when I think of that, I think our kids are always watching, you know, and it's such a reminder that they learn so much more from what we do than they'll ever learn from what we say. So, my daughters sometimes will compare their adoption stories. Katie coming from India and Anna being locally born of immigrant parents. They used to compare the cost of their adoptions. So, so the program from which I received Anna was subsidized by their expensive newborn adoption program and had a substantially lower cost than the usual newborn adoptions. So Anna says that she was on the clearance rack. So, and that I paid had to pay full price for Katie. So, okay, so. But those are Anna's words, not mine. And it's sort of a family joke that you have to be a little careful how you tell it. So, yeah. Before Katie's senior year in high school, she developed a chronic neurological problem that's had lots of ups and downs. During Katie's several hospitalizations, Tanya Kamek moved into the house, took over taking care of things, taking care of the dog. Many members of FBC have continued to support us in the tough days and the ordinary days, and we feel very well loved. Doug and Lisa have 13 grandchildren, and I borrow them and claim them as my own. Lizzie's here, and she actually bought my house that I raised my kids in, and it's so much fun to go there and see them using every square inch of it and all the fun changes that they made, and especially nice that I don't have to take care of it anymore. So, yeah. So, 10 years ago, I moved from the bigger house where I'd lived for 25 years and downsized in preparation for retirement, moving into the house that I could get hauled off to assisted living from. So, in the process of doing that, I accidentally missed my spring mammograms and with the move, and 6 months later got recalled by Inland Imaging and to discover with that on a routine mammogram that I had aggressive breast cancer. So, the surgeon said that if I'd had my mammograms as scheduled in the spring, I would have been metastatic by the time I was diagnosed. So we're just thankful to the Lord for letting me forget in the busyness of moving that I was supposed to get a mammogram. So she said it wouldn't, my tumor was not there in the spring. So I'd moved a year earlier than I'd originally planned, but the Lord knew I didn't need to take care of a big house and a yard the year I was doing all my cancer stuff. So the body of people here surrounded us with love and food and rides and yard work and time. Kelly Dean came and met with us just to see what kind of support are we going to need and then help to organize, you know, the meals and what that might look like. I had 6 rounds of chemo, 3 surgeries, and 7 weeks of radiation, but I've just celebrated my 10 years and I'm cancer-free. So, good dear friends of ours are Don and Aaron Morrison. I think Don's still here. Yeah. I met them when I had their son Jacob in my 2-year-old class. How old is Jacob now, Don? 29. Okay, so yeah. Okay, so a while back. If you did not ever know Jacob Morrison, he was the cutest little boy on the planet. Just a cute little bug. But we have been good friends really since those years. My daughter Anna is now 28, and she's been married to Nate for 4 years. For her wedding, Anna wanted 2 of our favorite FBC men who had been influential in her life to dance with her in lieu of a father-daughter dance. So even though, Aaron Morrison has not yet danced with his own daughters, he danced with my daughter at her wedding. So, and Doug, of course, danced with her as well. And then they handed her off to her new father-in-law. So what's the take-home message from me today from my ramblings? Single parenting is a part of society. If you're a married couple of any age, seek out a single parent family that you can get to know and demonstrate for them what biblical marriage and biblical parenting looks like. If you're a single parent, try and be bold and ask a couple or a family that you see doing marriage and family life well, if you can somehow be a part of their circle. So, if you're an empty nester or a single woman of a certain age, seek out a young family to provide date nights or just engage the children to give moms, whether they're single or married, a little bit of a break. You can be a different voice, or you can stand in for grandparents who may live far away. Katie and I enjoyed doing this for Paul and Christy Funches since they've come to town. So it does take a village, or a term I more commonly hear today, a tribe, to raise up a godly family. As I reflect on my life, it's quite different than I would have planned or expected when I was a teenager and younger. I didn't plan to never marry, to adopt it instead of birth, or as we say in the family, to get children from the takeout window. I didn't plan to adopt a premature infant at 44. I didn't anticipate having an adult daughter with significant health problems, or that I'd be living with her when I'm 71. But God has our steps planned. And even though my life is non-traditional, it's my good life that I love. And it's supported by my dear and godly friends, many of whom are here today. So when life is hard and I think too much or worry about my daughters or their futures, I am reminded by Peter in 1 Peter 5:7 to cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this audio from Faith Bible Church. Feel free to share. Visit us online at fbchurch.org for more sermons, articles, and other resources, as well as information about our ministries.